Hi, it's Patrick here, and this podcast is not brought to you by Ancestry.com, but it almost could be. It feels like those Ancestry people, they're hounding me. There's an ad from them on my Facebook. Maybe it's on yours too. It's a picture, I think it's of Queen Elizabeth I of England, you know, the Tudor one. And the line next to it is, "Do you have royal blood? Your last name may tell you." Okay, that might appeal to my princess-loving daughter more than it does to me, but it does get you thinking. Who were my ancestors? What did they do? What language or languages did they speak? And how do they define me? I'm going to ask Nina about that right after this.
The word in words is ni possible in par by national endowment from the humanity celebrate 15 years of excellence.
Nina.
Hey, Patrick. What's up?
Here's a deliberately vague question.
Oh, good. My favorite.
Where do you come from?
Oh, like me personally or my family or... Well, this is very hard.
Okay, where do your grandparents come from?
My father's parents, one of them... My grandmother was born in Vilnius when it was Poland. And then my grandfather was born in Warsaw. And on the other side, my grandparents are from Philadelphia. Mm. So Americans, but like very recent Americans. Their parents are from Moldova.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how far back can you go?
It's funny because like Europe changes, like so all the sort of the national lines keep changing.
Yeah.
So I don't know like really how far back, but mostly like Eastern European.
Yeah. So have you ever had your DNA analyzed?
No.
Wow, you said that really like you had never even considered it.
Well, I mean, I actually have never thought like, oh, does it really matter like what part of me is this or what that means? It seems a little abstract, really, to me. Have you had your DNA analyzed?
No. And maybe I might. I don't know. I mean, the price keeps coming down.
That's true. Maybe I'm afraid of the diseases I would find out that I have. can you find out, like, the genetic... Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be kind of cool if, you know, among those Eastern Europeans and all of that, suddenly just a little bit of, I don't know, Tibetan popped out?
It would be really cool. It would be really unlikely. But it would be really, really cool.
Never say never. My mother insists that there's some Spanish in my family.
Oh, really?
Which just seems totally bizarre. I mean, for anybody who hasn't seen me, I look about as un-Hispanic
Spanish.
As imaginable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would love if there would be a little Spanish in me somewhere. I doubt it, but yeah.
But it sounds as though, I don't know, it's a difficult hypothetical, but if you found out about something that you didn't know about before from your family's past, that would make you think differently about who you are?
It's true. I mean, there's actually a lot that I don't know about my family's past, like very recent past. And I don't know that I have opened up that Pandora's box because I don't know that I'm particularly ready for where it would lead me. But what about you? I mean, do you know it? What are your grandparents from?
Oh, yes. You know, I have two Irish grandparents and two English grandparents. The two English grandparents, they're kind of mutts a little bit like Americans insofar as they've got Scottish and Irish in them as well as English. I think on the Irish side, it's more sort of like been in Ireland for, you know, as long as anybody can remember.
So there is a chance that you could be related to royal blood. Like you could have royal blood. There's a chance, a small chance.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want the Irish relatives knowing that. They wouldn't be so happy as the English ones. Okay, well, consider this. If you were born in the middle of Italy, in Tuscany or Umbria, well, lucky for you, for starters.
No kidding.
But you may also wonder where you came from, especially if you've got Etruscan blood in you.
Ooh.
Etruscans, yeah. Who the hell are the Etruscans?
Actually, that's the question I wanted to ask you. Who the heck are they?
We're going to hear all about the Etruscans today. And a lot of people, with or without Etruscan roots, they're trying to find out more about where the Etruscans came from. They're trying to find out by linking them genetically to other people in other parts of the world, and also by linking them linguistically. And this is a little bit of a problem, Nina, because the Etruscan language is not part of any known language family. It's what the linguists call a language isolate.
Okay, explain what that means.
All on its own. It has no linguistic relatives.
Is it sort of like Basque? What are other...
Right.
Okay.
It just doesn't give up its secrets easily.
Ah.
Most inconvenient. But it is not inconvenient enough for Alina Simone.
Nothing. Nothing escapes Alina Simone.
For hundreds of years, scholars have debated the origin of the Etruscans, a powerful clan with an alien tongue and strange customs, who emerged in what is now central Italy, sometime around the 6th century BC. But no one is more obsessed with the Etruscans than the Italians themselves, and I'm not just talking history nerds.
I think that 90% of taxi drivers can tell you something about Etruscans.
This is Francesco Cini, a resident of Florence who recently managed the major excavation of an Etruscan well.
I am personally fascinated by Etruscans. There's a lot of people who is fascinated about Etruscans because it's a very charming ancient population.
But there were hundreds of groups migrating around Europe at the same time, and the Etruscan language has been dead for more than a millennium. So why should we care about these guys?
The Etruscans are basically the teachers of the Romans.
Yaroslav Gorbachev is a linguistics professor at the University of Chicago. The Etruscans were the first kings of Rome, he explains, and were hugely influential on the Romans. They passed along elements of Greek civilization, like the invention of alphabetic writing, and essentially helped plant the seeds of Western culture.
A lot of what the Romans did, a lot of their beliefs, came from the Etruscans. So they are the teachers of our teachers, and it's just a fascinating issue. Where did the teachers of our teachers come from?
Their language may be dead, but people are still using Etruscan words today. Words like people. And linguistics is just one tool scholars are using to figure out whether the ancient historian Herodotus may have been right about how the Etruscans first reached Italy. According to Herodotus, the story goes something like this. Around 800 BC, there was a famine in Lydia, what is now Western Turkey. Eventually, the king, quote, divided the people into two groups and made them draw lots, so that the one group should remain and the other leave the country. It's unclear which group this scenario actually favored, but according to Herodotus, the castaways eventually ended up in Italy.
Now, Herodotus has multiple stories that sound fishy, and so some people, you know, outright dismissed Herodotus' story. And other people who have studied the Etruscans were fascinated by this and kind of semi-convinced that it might be true.
Over the past 15 years, linguists have uncovered some tantalizing clues. Similarities between Etruscan and certain languages of Bronze Age Western Turkey are uncanny. There are certain words that, Gorbachev says, could only have been borrowed from the Lydians and their neighbors, the Luvians. For example, the Etruscan word for wine.
Which is matu, looks precisely like the Luvian word for wine, which is matu with a double T.
And the Etruscans shared some unique customs with the Lydians and Luvians as well, like the practice of haruspicy.
Which is a form of divination from inspection of, well, basically entrails, mostly, usually liver, of sacrificial animals, and you kind of glean the will of the gods by inspecting the liver of sacrificed animals.
Then in 2007, Italian geneticist Alberto Piazza found what seemed to be the smoking gun, studying paternally inherited DNA from people living in three formerly Etruscan communities. Piazza discovered a residual genetic link to, you guessed it, Turkey. And a different study found that a local breed of cattle also shared a genetic link with Turkey. Anthony Tuck, a professor of archaeology at UMass Amherst, who has studied Etruscan civilization for 27 years, was there in the ancient Etruscan town of Bescabada the day news of Piazza's DNA discovery broke.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Tuck saw for himself how the region's immigrants reacted to the finding.
The Serbs and the Kosovars and the North Africans who live in Vescovado were clapping and honking horns. That all of a sudden, like the Tuscans, who always had a kind of a scratchy relationship to these immigrants, then all of a sudden they were the immigrants.
But unlike these recent arrivals, Tuck is not convinced the Etruscans really were from Turkey.
As an archaeologist, you know, I look at and think about material culture. And, you know, the architecture of the Etruscans, the language of the Etruscans, the virtually every aspect of the physical and material behavior of the Etruscans doesn't look anything like that which we see in Lydia.
He doesn't see any hard proof that the Etruscans weren't simply members of an ancient indigenous culture. That's the problem with the Etruscan mystery. Could, might, we just don't know. What few clues remain can be interpreted in many different ways. Here you're listening to a modern interpretation of how Etruscan music might have sounded, based on the look of their instruments. The Eastern words and customs found among the Etruscans, they could easily have been borrowed. Ideas, religions, and catchphrases circulated in ancient times just as they do today. What explains that DNA overlap? Well, Turkish women could have circulated too, sold or bartered in ancient chattel markets. And in 2013, another study conducted with the same groups only using maternally inherited DNA showed no genetic link to Turkey. Results that back the theory of another ancient historian, Dionysus of Halicarnassus, who claimed the Etruscans were just always there. Maybe the real debate isn't between Herodotus and Halicarnassus, but whether it really matters.
What makes someone Etruscan? Is it purely a linguistic question? We don't really do ourselves a whole lot of favors when we kind of paint with big, broad strokes and talk about like mysterious cultures and whatnot. And the culture is simply a much more complex entity than just the question of who you're, you know, who 30, 40 generations back contributed to your genetic identity.
Okay, sure. Etruscan culture can't just be explained with a blood test, but there's still this desire to understand exactly how they came to be in Italy, a desire to separate historical fact from fiction, which continues to motivate scholars like Yaroslav Gorbachev.
So if you take these pieces of evidence, the textual, the linguistic, the genetic, the archaeological, and cultural slash material, in isolation, then, you know, some of the pieces look inconclusive, some of them look iffy, but if you take them all together, and they all seem to point east, I am personally convinced that Herodotus was for once right.
A lot of native Italians are too, like Francesco.
I would be excited to know that I have some Turkish DNA in my blood, just to know that it's a part of my story, because it's interesting.
It's kind of like learning you have a drop of Viking blood, the new my great-great-grandmother was Native American. Maybe the Etruscans really were the original Italians. But what kind of story is that?
Alina Simone is a writer, musician, and friend of this podcast. And she's so right. We all want a bit of cosmopolitanism in our genes. We want ancestors who spoke a mysterious, dead language. Bonus points if it had its own unique, you know, way of conjugating or something like that. Okay, we're now going to set aside those concerns about whether learning anything about your past really tells you anything about yourself. We're noting those concerns, we're setting them aside, and we're going to do what Ancestry.com and everybody else wants us to do. We are going to fulfill the desire to know, to click on the ad, to get our DNA analyzed. Our proxy is Carol Zoll. She used to work for The Big Show, and she still does quite a bit of behind-the-scenes work for this podcast. In 2012, Carol decided to see what she could find out from her own genes. I was especially intrigued about this because Carol is, how shall I put it, obsessed with Celtic languages. She speaks a couple of them, even though she appears to have no Celtic roots whatsoever. So here's what happened.
This is Carol Zoll interviewing Ray Zoll. My grandmother worked Bobby in Yiddish.
It used to be that if you wanted to find out about your family history, you had to sit down with your relatives and ask them what they knew.
Now, Mrs. Zoll, could you tell us about your childhood?
What can I tell you? What would you like to know?
Tell me about your life.
That recording is from 1978, when I was 11 years old. Armed with my blue Panasonic tape recorder, I'd persuaded my grandmother, my Bubby, to grant me an interview.
Where were you born?
I was born in a small place. The name was called Kashchuki.
What?
Kashchuki. Kashchuki, it's a country, small place.
What country was it near?
That was Russian Poland.
The location of my grandmother's village was confusing to me then, and it's still confusing now. She was born at the beginning of the 20th century in what is now Belarus, but was then Poland, or as she put it, Russian Poland. I've never been able to find her village, Kashuki, on a map, and I don't even know the names of the places my other relatives came from, which has made it hard to trace my roots. But 34 years later, I finally have a new lead on my family tree, and it doesn't involve a tape recorder. That's me a few months ago, spitting into a plastic tube to provide a DNA sample.
This is kind of disgusting. I'm kind of out of spit.
Advances in the field of genomics have made it possible to use a person's DNA to find out where their ancestors may have come from. Recently, this kind of analysis has become available and affordable to the general public, and I've been wanting to try it ever since I heard about it. So, for about $200, I signed up with a company called 23andMe. It's 23 because we all have 23 pairs of chromosomes. And the next thing I knew, I was mailing my saliva to their lab.
And that lab, the first step they take is to extract the DNA from the saliva.
Joanna Mountain is Senior Director of Research at 23andMe.
And then they take that DNA, and it gets cut up into little pieces, and they put the DNA onto what we call a chip.
Human DNA is like a code made up of 3 billion letters. 23andMe doesn't look at all of those letters, or positions, as they're called, just about a million of them.
And those positions are chosen because they are particularly interesting, because they vary from one person to another.
It's those interesting positions that testing companies are using to find out all kinds of information, from diseases you could be at risk for in the future to details about your past.
The goal was to see what we could find out about ourselves.
Harvard researcher Joe Pickrell is one of about a dozen people, all scientists or experts in genomics, who've made their genetic data available to the public on a website called Genomes Unzipped. While Joe and the other folks at Genomes Unzipped wanted to blog about issues surrounding genetic testing, Joe wasn't really expecting any big personal discoveries.
And so what happened is actually the first day we put this data online, there's a guy who runs a website where he does ancestry analysis. And so he took all of our data and put it through his software.
Pickrell had always thought his ancestors came from Ireland, Italy, and the UK. But now there was something new in the mix.
It turned out in his analysis that I had some Jewish ancestry.
Pickrell was skeptical.
I had never heard anything about Jewish ancestry in my family, and I had no idea that that was even a possibility.
But he started running his own analyses, and the closer he looked, the more it seemed he did have Jewish roots. And then he spoke to his family.
And in the end, it turns out that it's true.
Pickrell found out that his great-grandfather was Jewish. He'd immigrated to the U.S. from Poland and married a Catholic woman, and they were worried about discrimination, so they decided to keep the Jewish ancestry secret. So
they had just said that he was Irish.
Now, in contrast to Joe, I've always known that my ancestors were Jewish. My entire family tree consists of European Jews, also known as Ashkenazi Jews. So I've always imagined my ancestors as people who spoke Yiddish and listened to music like this. But since Ashkenazi spent centuries wandering around Europe, living among different populations, I've always wondered who else was in my family tree. After all, my mother's mother and all her siblings had red hair and blue eyes, and people always think my sister, a redhead with freckles, is Irish. So could I possibly have Celtic forebears? Maybe that would explain my connection to Scotland. I went there to study Celtic literature for a year, and ended up staying for over a decade. Or maybe I have ancestors from some other European population. In theory, I could. But what actually showed up in my DNA analysis was a very Ashkenazi Jewish-looking genome.
It looks like about two-thirds of it is traced back to an Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry, either in, you know, Russia, Poland, Belarus, and so on.
Joanna Mountain of 23andMe went over my results with me. She explained that I share a lot of DNA segments with other people in their database whose known ancestry is also Ashkenazi Jewish. And that's how testing companies determine ancestry. They compare your genes to known reference populations to see which ones they resemble most.
So this is where your Jewish ancestry really pops out.
So that's all the DNA testing could tell me? That my ancestors were Jewish? All that spitting and $200 later, the big headline is something I already knew. In other words, I'm exactly who I always thought I was. It's still pretty amazing that a scientist can look at my DNA and see that I have ancestors from Belarus or Russia, just like my grandparents told me. But think how cool it would have been to have found something completely unexpected, like being Norwegian, or Native American, or even Scottish. Maybe I just wanted a surprise. Or at the very least, more answers to some of my questions.
How did your uncle look? Did your uncle have a piano? And how did you look when you were little?
I don't know about my great-great-uncle's piano, but among my test results, there was one piece of information to chew on, and that came from something called my mitochondrial DNA.
And that piece of DNA is handed down from mother to child. So all of us can trace our maternal lineage back through the mother's 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 mother.
My mitochondrial DNA traces back to a woman who lived about 15,000 years ago in southwestern Europe. What's interesting is that this particular DNA isn't common among Ashkenazi Jews, which means that somewhere on my mother's line, there was probably a non-Jewish woman who married one of my Jewish ancestors. That's not so surprising, given the red hair and the history of Jews in Europe. But the fact that you can read that story in my genes takes it to a different level. And while I haven't learned anything especially new about where I came from, the science behind this is changing really fast. Sometime in the next decade, the cost of having your whole genome sequenced, all 3 billion letters of the code, will become affordable. And when that happens, says Harvard's Joe Pickrell, that'll change everything all over again.
So what you'd be able to do is look at an individual's genome and say, all right, they have this mutation which arose in a particular village in the south of France, for example. And then you'd be able to say with nearly 100% certainty that you have some ancestor who came from that particular village.
So now I'm waiting for the day when I can have my entire genome sequenced. But in the meantime, the most exciting thing I've learned about my ancestry is something that goes back a lot further than some European village. In fact, it goes all the way back to the Stone Age. New studies suggest that humans may have interbred with Neanderthals tens of thousands of years ago. And the 23andMe website recently added a feature that lets you see what percentage, if any, of your DNA comes from Neanderthals. So I clicked on the link and got my result. Somewhere up the line, many thousands of years before the red hair and the mitochondrial DNA were part of the story, before the dawn of recorded time or the existence of words like Europe or Ashkenazi, I was a twinkle in a Neanderthal's eye.
Carol Zoll lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So that was 4 years ago, in 2012. She sent me a couple of updates. She mentioned in her piece that the cost of having your entire genome sequenced was coming down. Well, it certainly continued to come down. And what used to cost as much as $100 million before it was available to consumers is now on offer from one company for as little as $1,000. Also, the company 23andMe has moved into the health traits field. That was always their intention, that you could test your DNA for all kinds of information about your own health, your predisposition to certain conditions and all of that. And back in 2012, when Carol did her report, the FDA was limiting 23andMe and other companies just to providing information about ancestry. But as of October of last year, 2015, 23andMe has been cleared to market genetic health tests directly to consumers without getting doctor's approval or anything like that, which is a way of saying that genetic testing is getting to be a much bigger deal in people's lives. Final update on this story, and this is my favorite one. Carol can now locate her grandmother's village on a map. Some listeners to the story, when it originally aired on The Big Show, they helped her out with that. Okay, that's it for the podcast this week. We have more on PRI.org/language. Also at the World in Words Facebook page. Please write a review at iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. One sentence is all it needs. It really helps. Thank you. You can contact me on Twitter. I'm at PatriCox, PatriCox. The podcast is at LingoPod. The accent on the NEH funder is, well, we had some right and semi-right answers and some wrong ones. It is Salvadoran. Here it is again. Thanks for listening.
The word in words is Ni Possible in Parbai National Endowment from the Humanities Celebrate 15 Years of Excellence.